Welcome to The Right Chamber, the podcast that takes you inside the NHS to explore what really makes a hospital a hospital.
Each episode, we sit down with the people who keep healthcare moving, from doctors, nurses on the front line, to students, the support teams, administrators, corporate staff, and everyone in between. These are the voices that often go unheard, but together they form the heartbeat of our hospitals.
Our aim is simple: to share authentic stories that are accessible to the public, meaningful to NHS staff, and a reminder that healthcare is more than treatments and wards. It's a whole community working together.
So whether you're part of the NHS family or simply curious about the people behind the service, join us as we open the doors to the conversations that matter here in the Right Chamber. Samantha Fisher is the lead alcohol clinical nurse specialist at the Dudley Group, with a specialist career in addiction nursing since 2008. Passionate about improving care for people affected by alcohol dependency, she's a dedicated advocate for both her patients and clinical team. Samantha brings extensive frontline experience, compassionate leadership, and a strong commitment to supporting recovery and reducing stigma in addiction services.
Hello and welcome back to The Right Chamber. I'm Victor.
And I'm Jaspreet. Today we're joined by Samantha Fisher, lead alcohol nurse here at the Trust.
In this episode, we'll be exploring the role of alcohol care teams, what they are, and why they're such an important part of modern healthcare.
We'll also look at some of the common misconceptions around alcohol and the real impact it can have on patients, staff, and the wider NHS.
From hospital admissions to system-wide pressures, this is a conversation about awareness, support, and the role we all play in improving outcomes.
So let's get into it. Sam, would you like to introduce yourself and what your role entails?
Hi, everyone. I'm Sam. I'm the lead alcohol clinical nurse specialist here at Russell's Hall. Myself and my fellow colleague Ruth started the alcohol care team back in 2022 here at Russell. Prior to that, there was no alcohol care team in place, and so we have developed the service since then, and it's gone from strength to strength, and we're very proud.
Wow, amazing. It's amazing to think, like, at one point there was just no alcohol care team. It wasn't deemed a huge part of
healthcare. So there was an adult team, okay, but they were very different to what we do here.
Because I think that's what we're more familiar with, adult team. So for our listeners, because this role obviously didn't exist until recently, what is your day-to-day like?
Our job is about supporting the patient, but also their families, because alcohol doesn't just affect the person, it affects everyone around them. And it's really important that in our role that we make sure that everyone is supported. A lot of my job is about advocating for the patient, writing detailed, person-centered plans in for patients, as well. I know we're going to touch upon in a bit, but alcohol withdrawal can be fatal, so it's important that there is accurate plans in place, a lot of safeguarding, educating staff, doing, and also the wider Dudley. We do a lot of education. We work with our partners. We work with a lot of different services. We work alongside the gastro team here at Russell's Hall, and we're really lucky to be part of the Dudley Integrated Liver Service, where we share an office and work alongside the team hepatology team, so the liver clinical nurse specialist team. We do fibro scanning of patients' livers. We do a lot of health education.
Alcohol is like a popular drink, right?
It's culture.
It's culture. What is the problem with alcohol that led to your role being developed?
NHS England, a few years ago, did some research in the United Kingdom. And since records began of looking at alcohol harm and admissions to hospital, alcohol attendances to hospital have increased year on year for 30 years. It's been an upward trend. There has not been a year where there's been a downward trend, which is really concerning. So NHS England initially set some funding for every hospital that was in a city could apply for this funding to have an alcohol care team. And then second wave funding was that any other hospital could apply. And this is where Russell's Hall got their funding from initially. And we set up the team.
And like you mentioned, alcohol isn't just something that affects the individual, but it can actually affect those around, affect, I guess, even community at large as well. And a lot of NHS resources at the moment is going into or is impacted on by alcohol in the society in one way or the other. So for the benefit of our public listeners who, you know, the relationship to alcohol might just be, you know, a pint on the weekend. It's not that big a deal. Why is it something worth talking about?
Why is it a problem?
So alcohol is a drug. It's the most harmful drug, more harmful than like to your health and what it does to the person than some most illicit drugs like heroin. But it's legal.
Wow.
And it's advertised absolutely everywhere. You see it on the back of the bus. It was advertised on my Christmas, on my Spotify. You know, there was the sound of the bottle and going, you know, like it's there. And if you try and get away from it, it's on your TV, it's in your newspaper. It's you walk into Tesco Express and it's one of the first things you see. And it's addictive. And it's a blocker and it blocks all the negative feelings that you have. At the same time, it harms you and can take everything from you. You know, it robs you of everything.
Yeah.
Do you think people don't look at it as a big problem because it's very socially acceptable, like smoking?
It's normal.
It's normal. Like for you to go out for a pint is normal.
And I think especially in the UK where we've got this culture that, you know, and there is, you know, sober shaming. And, you know, I don't drink alcohol and I'm aware that even people, friends, family will sober shame you but not realize they're sober shaming you. And it's a big thing, like, oh, go on, have a drink, you know, because it's in I think people think it's ingrained in our culture to have a drink and go to the pub and go to a club, or, you know, if you're happy, people say like, oh, have a Prosecco, or, you know, if you're sad, it's about alcohol. Everything is around alcohol.
Yeah.
So it's very difficult.
And, you know, there used to be thoughts at some point that, okay, if it's a little bit of alcohol, it's not so bad. Or even thoughts that maybe it was even beneficial at some point. That used to be the thoughts. But I think more recent studies are finding that there is actually just zero benefit. So I guess it's not to say, okay, right, start banning everything or whatever, but just being aware of this isn't actually good for me, just as fast food isn't, just as many other things are. So you eat, say, junk food with awareness, knowing, okay, this isn't good for me. I still want it, but okay, maybe I'll caution myself and maybe have a little bit or think twice about whether I should have it at all or go for another option. So I think that kind of awareness might be what's lacking when it's so deeply ingrained and normalized.
So we've come to the conclusion that alcohol is bad, yes? But what are the harmful effects of alcohol that you have seen that have caused people, individuals and families to be destroyed?
I've seen it just take a whole person, people that were professional, working, people with good jobs with their children, with their partner, and gradually alcohol has taken everything from their marriage to their relationship with their children, to then the moving out of the home, to losing their job, to losing their license, to then causing them to have frequent falls, head injuries, liver disease, pancreatitis. It's a type 1 carcinogenic, so it causes, it's a leading cause of cancer in several parts of the body. I've seen young people in their 30s, sometimes even 20s, with alcohol related brain damage, meaning they've got dementia caused from alcohol. This is affecting the young. It's not just an elderly, issue. Family struggle, because, and still the person will choose alcohol, even though alcohol has made them lose all of them things, and they still are putting alcohol on a pedestal. It's not a choice. You don't choose to become alcohol dependent. It is a medical condition, and it changes the way your brain works. And the only way I can describe it is that your brain kind of pulls you back. When you stop drinking, it pulls you back in, and your brain wants to take you back to when you were drinking at your worst. I think there was a study, but over COVID,
yes,
and that there was an 80% increase in over 80s-year-olds drinking alcohol dependently due to lockdown, the anxiety of
just like boredom,
isolation.
Effects are still present there as well, isn't it?
So, what we want to know is, say someone wants to stop alcohol, right? A lot of people will think that, well, actually, if I just stop it, I'll just go away.
Yeah.
What are the dangers of that?
So if you're physically dependent on alcohol, you can't just stop. Stopping abruptly can cause you to have an alcohol withdrawal seizure, or potentially go into delirium tremens, which is the most severe form of alcohol withdrawal. And once you go into delirium tremens, there is approximately 15 to 30% chance you'll die. So you can't just stop drinking alcohol suddenly. The best thing is, the first step is, it's amazing that you've admitted you've got a problem and you want help. And that is amazing. And it's about accessing the correct support. So for Dudley, there is Atlantic Recovery Centre, which is in Lyme. It's a community alcohol team, and they have the funding for ambulatory or inpatient detoxification and rehab. Depending on your locality, your local authority, every local authority has got a community alcohol team. For Sandwell, a lot of our patients now come here. It's Cranston, and the same for Worcestershire. But there are also private detox centres that some do offer charitable beds if you phone and ask, which is a free bed. Some obviously you can pay. And there is a lot of, Alcoholics Anonymous. Get yourself in some kind of support. Realise that you're not on your own. There are teams that are out there that can help you.
I think the first step is admitting it, that you have
totally.
So in your role, say a patient came in and they are obviously alcohol dependent. Can you walk us through how you get involved? As from the first point of doctor stating that I think it's patient.
So we might see them before the doctors.
Awesome.
So because we'll just pick up anyone that comes through A&E who drinks alcohol to excess. So it depends, obviously, of what that reasoning to come to A&E is and whether or not they need an admission. We don't routinely admit patients here for detox unless there is a physical health or a rationale as to why. But we will get involved and support our patients into making sure they get the right support in the community. There is in our admission document, which all doctors should complete, is it's what's called an audit C. And an audit C is three questions that ask you how often you drink, how much you drink, and it gives you a score. And if it's 10 or to 12, which is the maximum is 12, that is an automatic referral to our team.
Okay, so you do see these patients regularly. I suppose the follow on from that then is a patient has now been admitted, they're on the ward. You can't be with every patient at the same time. So, for the benefit of some of our listeners who will be hospital staff, as well as the members of the public, but particularly hospital staff as well, if they are looking after, if one of their patients is someone who is alcohol dependent, are there key things that they should be looking out for that might be related to maybe withdrawal and escalating early? What kind of things should they be aware of? Maybe not even necessarily withdrawal.
So always refer to the alcohol care team via Sunrise on referrals. But check to see, scroll back in the notes to see if we've already done a plan. We are very on it with seeing patients. And if we've missed someone, we'd prefer a referral in. But have the confidence to ask the patient questions about their alcohol use. Just ask them how often they drink, what they drink, when was their last drink, and how long they've been drinking for. And document that in the notes, because it gives a good idea. And if they say they're drinking every day, is it to start what's called a CWAR, a clinical institute withdrawal assessment. It's found on flow sheets. And use your clinical observation skills to watch a patient. You know, withdrawal is categorized by being tachycardic, so a high heart rate. There might be tremulous, might be a bit agitated, might have clammy palms or be sweaty. They might be feeling a bit sick or have a headache, and see what the score is. And we use this little analogy that we've made up called, if you see was eight, medicate.
Okay. What I'm keen to talk about is this, as we said prior, the relationship with alcohol is quite embedded in culture. And so with that, we also have to recognize that there are multitudes of cultures within the UK society, of which some, the topic of alcohol might actually be a subject that is not spoken about so freely, or it's a taboo,
it's just taboo
subject. How can people who fall within these groups begin to seek help if they are affected, if it's something that is just not talked about, or it's such like a no-go area?
People are scared, like they'll be abandoned or disowned. How do these people seek help?
I can give you, there's like, in the Sikh community, there is some absolute fabulous work going on with the Gurdwaras, and Sikh Recovery Network, and there's Punjabi AA, but it's all about just speak to anyone. You know, if you came to hospital, we will always support, and it would be within, you know, in confidence, and we would try and get you the support required.
There is a plethora of help available out there. I suppose it's just about even a podcast like this just begins to bring such conversations into the open. And if it can be so normalized to talk about, and, you know, there's adverts everywhere encouraging drinking, then surely it can also be kind of normalized to say, actually, I don't drink. And that's okay.
And it is, and it's a good thing, but it might leave me to being out of a job in the future, is that actually we're finding that a lot of younger generation aren't drinking alcohol. So, you know, there has been a shift, which is a really positive movement that we're seeing. And there is been this revolution now of non-alcoholic versions of alcoholic beverages. And there's actually a sober bar in Birmingham open, which just sells non-alcoholic drinks. And that there are more and more groups starting where you can go and have go out, but that everyone's sober. And you're finding that there are events now where there is no alcohol being served. I.e. there was like a comedy event in Birmingham where it was a sober event. And I just think this is like fabulous that that we're now, it's definitely since I've been an addictions nurse for 18 years and I've seen such a massive positive movement going forward. There was sober festivals, like, you know, so you don't have to feel anymore that you're alone.
Mm.
Is that there are is a lot of support. There's a lot of forums online. There's a lot of on Eventbrite or whatever the thing is. If you type sober in, there's loads of events. You know, it's really good. It's really positive.
It's a positive culture shift, isn't it?
Yeah.
Hopefully that continues, because going to a sober event is also a lot safer than going to an event where...
So I've got some facts here for you. Yeah. So over 70% of violent incidents on weekends, evening and nights are alcohol related. And in fires, in dwelling fires, alcohol contributed approximately 8% of incidents in England, but over 50% of home fire fatalities were due to alcohol. Alcohol impairment significantly increases the risks of making fire-related deaths, over three times more likely. And 40% of dwelling fire fatalities in England involved alcohol, with 35 to 49 age group most at risk.
39 to 45 most
year
at
old
risk, right?
Yeah.
Mm.
And then alcohol is a significant factor in UK crime, associated with roughly 4 million offences annually.
It's deep seated into almost all parts of society and what we see. So it's not just the effect of the alcohol itself, but also the effect on crime, the effect on safety, the effect on, you know, nightlife and its safety, fire hazards. So it's something that's quite...
And drink driving, 8,000 casualties from drink driving accidents in 2023.
Because you'll see people like actually be like, oh, I've just had a pint, and then drive anyways.
So it's just in Parliament at the moment. It's just in discussion, and they are looking to dropping the alcohol drink drive limit, so lowering it again, which is absolutely amazing. So it will be in line with Scotland, who are revolutionising alcohol recovery. So it'll drop quite significantly, which means that You couldn't even have half a pint because you'd be over the limit with half a pint of standard strength lager. The most, like, mortality, the average age of death for an alcohol specific mortality in 2023 was 57.2 years, roughly 20 years younger than the average death age of 78.
Wow.
So it's just, you know, it's just the statistics are just...
They're staggering, aren't they?
Yeah.
Is there any advice that you have for, I guess it's a big ask, but population, the general public at large, or towards our healthcare staff as well, who might come across patients who are alcohol dependent? Any general advice that you'd have?
So, don't judge. Don't stigmatize. It is an illness and it can be treated with medication and psychosocial support. You know, it's not a choice. So, you know, please don't stigmatize, you know, don't be judge. But there is support out there and you don't feel that you're alone. Alcohol dependent, you know, it doesn't discriminate. It can happen to anyone at any time. And probably most people know someone or have been through something. And so let's just start talking about it. Let's support one another. But if ultimately is that if any staff have any issues or they're affected by this, they can contact me at the alcohol care team and I can direct support. I'm happy to help.
So we'd definitely like to bring you on for another episode. Tell us who we have planned coming for the next episode and why they're a key for conversations such as this.
So I'm really excited to come back to see you guys because I won't be alone. I'll be with Nav, we will be discussing recovery and hope and different things all related to what's available for when you stop drinking and, yeah, different things. So very excited for him to be on show and share his story.
I think that would be a great episode to, like, follow through with this, from this one.
Nav was amazing. And he's so supportive of us here at Russell's Hall. And he supports us with our different events. So some of you listeners may have met Nav at different events.
Oh, wow. I'm excited to meet Nav. Thank you so much, Sam.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for coming on the podcast today. So much golden nuggets, I'll say there, for our members of staff.
Still a little bit of, like, positivity out there. Like,
yeah.
There's some hope.
Yeah. It's good to know.
There really is. Yeah. And there is a lot of support.
Yeah. Things are becoming more positive. Things are shifting in the right direction. Obviously, the stats that you said is still climbing year on year. Hopefully, we'll start to see a
fingers
decline.
Crossed.
Fingers crossed. Brilliant. Thanks, everyone who's been paying attention to the podcast and everyone's been watching. That will come to the end of the podcast today, and we will see you at the next one. Thank you.
Remember to stay connected with us on social media. Follow us on Instagram and TikTok at RGUCMS and subscribe to our YouTube channel, RGUC Media, for more exclusive content and updates. Thanks for tuning in to the Right Chamber podcast. Until next time.